From the City of Angels, near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, Sci-Fi with Mark Zakri joining us. That'll be fun. But here's what's happening. Whoa, what a day it was. Six police officers injured, 217 protesters arrested after a morning of protests and coordinated disruption of Donald Trump's inauguration ceremony gave way to ugly street clashes in downtown Washington, D.C. At least two D.C. police officers and one other person were taken to the hospital after the run-ins with protesters, injuries not considered serious. And vowing to get the job done, President Trump took office Friday, outlining a drastically different agenda than that of his predecessor and installing key members of his national security team as he began the work now of turning his bold campaign promises into action. At the inauguration, of course, Chris Berry, senior vice president of the iHeart News stations. Chris, must have been pretty exciting out there.
I tell you, what a historic day, George. You know, you think about sort of the message that he had about the populism and kind of, you know, taking it away from the politicians, giving it back to the people who elected him. And it wasn't as large of a crowd as we've seen in the past. Obviously, part of that probably had to do with the weather, which it was threatening throughout the day, although it did not rain when he was actually giving his address. And, of course, the threat of violence and protests and things like that. I think that people who might not have normally thought about taking their families down to something like this, they thought, well, you know what, maybe not. There might be a little bit of problem. And boy, there was. About 10:30 this morning, this mob started kind of running through an area of Washington, D.C., just a few blocks from the White House, smashing windows and Starbucks, Bank of America, things like that, really confronting police and doing it very aggressively, too. And as you said, more than 200 of this highly organized mob was arrested by D.C. police.
And, Chris, of course, they aren't really protesters. To me, they're thugs. If they're going to disrupt and, you know, break windows and mayhem, they're not protesting.
You know, you're so right. Because when it comes to the really the constitutional guarantees that we have to protest and kind of address our government on issues, there are ways to do that. And there were people who were doing it in a way that was more appropriate, if you can use those words. Right down there by the Capitol, there were demonstrators who had signs and who had their message that they were trying to give out. Along the parade route, I'm sure that both Donald and Melania Trump saw these protesters with signs that were accusing him of being Putin's puppet and things like that. So, yeah, this was not a demonstration, you know, that is guaranteed under your Constitution. This was mayhem.
And the festivities tonight, Chris, went well, and I was somewhat emotional, because when you think of John F. Kennedy and, you know, presidents like that, Donald Trump is now right in the middle of that. He is our president.
You are absolutely right. He is in the middle of it, and he celebrated tonight the way that all of these presidents have, really going back to the earliest days of our country. He had three official inaugural balls. Now, there are other balls that happen around the country also, and around the city, that are not officially sanctioned, but still you know, a lot of fun, where they bring out the bands and the dancers and things like that. All black tie, of course. You know, to go through Washington tonight, you would hear sirens screaming as these different dignitaries would be moving from ball to ball. And it was a motorcade going through. And you had to wonder, you know, who exactly is that in that motorcade? Is that the president or vice president? Or could it even be one of the former presidents moving from one location to another? Because, of course, they still have significant Secret Service protection, especially at a time like this.
Chris, thank you, by the way. You and your team did a great job today providing news and information to all the iHeart stations, and just superb job.
Well, you know, it's just part of what we do on Coast to Coast, too. I mean, giving out the information and the news in a real unfiltered way without any, you know, conservative, liberal, or whatever. George, you do a terrific job, too, in that Mutual Admiration Society.
All right, you take care. Have some fun in Washington, D.C. Chris Berry, Senior Vice President of Muse for the iHeart stations. Dr. John Curtis, of course, editor of the online columnist.com, has been with us since all these campaigns started, way back in the beginning. John, how did you feel today? I want your real feelings on how you felt today.
I think it's very satisfying. You know, I mean, the speech, I think a lot of people were expecting highfalutin rhetoric of Clinton or Obama, kind of one-upsmanship, you know, these long-winded speeches that say little, but basically, you know, it's all this, you know, rhetorical flourishes. Trump was pithy. That's the operative term here. I mean, he was to the point. He repeated, you know, it's like a mini campaign speech, more than it was an inauguration speech. But, you know, to his supporters, he's speaking from, you know, down to earth. He's speaking directly. They don't want a lot of flowery rhetoric. They're interested in let's get it on. Let's get the changes. You got the feeling the entire day with Trump that while you could see him trying to enjoy the festivities and go through the motions, there's this impatience of let's get to work. Let's get to work.
Yeah, he wanted to roll up the sleeves and start at it.
Absolutely. And I think that you couldn't help but see, you know, Hillary Clinton just asking herself on that stage and Obama not being able to look at Trump at all, looking down, barely able to contain his disgust over what Trump was saying, which was essentially that the last 8 years have been wasted, that they haven't accomplished anything, that the country, the economy is not in good shape, not as it's been advertised. But Hillary, all of the regret, the blaming James Comey, blaming, you know, the Vladimir Putin, all the nonsense that happened after this election. And here Trump is in this speech reminding people why he won this, because those forgotten people, the people that are unemployed in the upper Midwest and with the as he said, the graveyard of tombstones of factories, these are the people that put Trump over the top in Wisconsin, in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, and Ohio. And I think what people got today was a statement from Trump that he's there for the people. And that's what he intends to do.
All right, you stay with us, John, because we're going to come back to you after the break to get your perspective on what you think could happen over the next 4 years. Howard Bloom, of course, supported Hillary Clinton, and it's only fair to get his side of the story. Your thoughts today, Howard?
Well, basically, in the speech today, the inauguration speech, Donald Trump said a few words that none of the headline writers seemed to notice. Even John Curtis didn't seem to find them. He declared that, quote, we must think big and dream even bigger. In America, we understand that a nation is only living as long as it is striving. Let me repeat that. A nation is only living as long as it is striving. I agree with that completely. We must, said Trump, be ready to unlock the mysteries of space, to free the earth from the miseries of disease, and to harness the energies, industries, and technologies of tomorrow. Now, here's the deal. If Donald Trump can act on those words, America may actually be better off 4 years from now than it is today. And there are small signs that Trump can pull that off. Since the election, November 8th, Donald Trump has had two meetings with the founder of SpaceX and Tesla Motors. That's Elon Musk. Musk is an immigrant from South Africa who has reinvented American manufacturing. Elon Musk has made all of his high-speed, high-class electric cars, his record-breaking rockets, they've all been made here in America. And Musk is building two of the biggest factories in history right here in the United States. One is a battery factory in Nevada. The other is a solar panel factory in Buffalo, New York. Now, if Trump puts together a team of Elon Musk's, and he's already got Peter Thiel, who used to be Elon Musk's partner at PayPal. Then Musk may transform the United States of America, but there's a dark side. There are some other things that Trump said in his inaugural speech. He said, we are transferring power, and this John Curtis did refer to, we are transferring power from Washington, D.C., and giving it back to you, the American people. You will never be ignored again. Now, words like these are frequently tip-offs to the birth of a dictator. What the man delivering them often means is that I'm the voice of the people, and since I'm the incarnation of your will, I should rule, and I should rule absolutely. And here's one other thing from Trump's inaugural speech. It's going to be America first. Protection will lead to great prosperity and strength. Buy American and hire American. At the bedrock of our politics will be a total allegiance to the United States of America. close quote, which all sounds good, but there are many who point out that protectionism pulled America, yanked it out of the prosperity of the 1920s, and plunged it into the Great Depression of 1929 to 1939, and that word allegiance can be frightening because it's one of the words that were used in witch hunts like the McCarthy era, in inquisitions to eliminate dissent. So there were two Donald Trumps on exhibit today in today's inauguration, one from the dark side, one from the side of light, and we have to hope that Trump and his White House move to the side of brightness.
We shall see. Howard, thank you, and thank you for participating during this entire campaign to the point where we are now. The United States Air Force conducted a second major strike in consecutive days, killing over 100 al-Qaeda fighters at a training camp in northern Syria. Drug kingpin Joaquin El Chapo Guzman, a Houdini-like master of escape, accused of running one of the world's largest drug trafficking organizations, entered a not guilty plea through his attorney at his arraignment Friday in federal court in Brooklyn, New York. In Great Falls, Montana, a Montana beekeeper says thieves got away with 488 beehives, about 190,000 bees that he had taken to California to pollinate almond trees. Somebody showed up in semi-trailers and stole the 488 beehives. They obviously knew what they were doing. A Florida woman filed a lawsuit against the Atlantis Paradise Resort in the Bahamas, alleging that she woke up covered with crawling bed bugs, hundreds of painful, swollen bites from her forehead down to her thighs. We'll see if that holds up in court. Six scientists have entered a dome perched atop a remote volcano in Hawaii, where they will spend the next 8 months in isolation to simulate life for astronauts traveling to Mars. And what else is going on up in the skies? Let's check in with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. What a day, Peter. What do you got?
Good evening, George, and what a momentous day it is, for heaven's sakes. It seems as though the skies are every bit as busy as Washington, D.C. tonight.
Absolutely.
Lots going on, and I hope our new president is brave and bold enough to finally square with the American people on what our government knows about the UFO.
Disclosure. We need it.
Yep. I got four short reports that I'll present briefly here.
Already?
This one takes us back to June of 1966, a report I received 4 days ago from a fellow who said in 1966 he was 23 years of age. He was a radar operator for the U.S. Army. He was posted to Tokishima Island in Japan. I don't know where that is, but obviously, a U.S. military facility was in presence there. And one Sunday afternoon, about noon, he says, he wandered into the radar shack. He was on his day off, interestingly, looked at the radar screen and was quite surprised to see five very solid targets hovering about 25 miles to the north of his facility. He called the officer of the day, who in turn called the U.S. Air Force. They scrambled three jet fighters that approached the targets on the radar screen, and as they approached, the five solid targets just faded from sight. How many times have we heard that before?
Yeah.
And the jets turned around, came back at the objects, which had reappeared. They disappeared a second time, and the jets returned to base. Very interesting report, and it makes me wonder what must be going on in the minds of those former pilots, what they remember of the incident. Second report comes from Beau Warner, New Hampshire, up in the central part of that state. Tuesday morning of this week, the 17th of January, a gentleman writes he was driving northwest on Interstate 89 that goes up to Vermont, and they both saw a metallic silver-looking object just streak down out of the sky. It was not a meteor, he emphasized. It was not self-luminous. It was just metallic in appearance, left no trail in the sky. He saw it only for about 5 seconds or so. He was left baffled by what he had seen. The next one is probably the most interesting report I've received this month. It comes from a very bright, very articulate young engineering student at Colorado State University at Fort Collins. Just about 48 hours ago, He was out walking his roommate's dog. It was about 11:32 p.m., I guess. And he was looking to the southern sky. Suddenly, his attention was riveted on a cluster of fluorescent green lights about the 1/6 the size of a full moon, which is very large in the night sky. These objects streaked over his head. They covered, he estimates, about 120 degrees of arc, a third of a circle over his head in about, he estimates, five, not more than 10 seconds. And as they got into the northern sky, he was looking at them disappear. They suddenly accelerated and streaked up into the sky. Very interesting report, and he's provided a very nice drawing, which is posted to the website, ufocenter.com. Last report briefly comes from Orlando, Florida tonight. A gentleman who describes himself as a U.S. Navy veteran of Navy aviation was standing outside with his uncle. They had just watched the launch out of Cape Canaveral at 7:42 p.m., 1942 hours tonight. And suddenly they started seeing countless orange lights moving from west to northeast across the sky in Orlando. This is a phenomenon, as you recall, George, I used to report those sightings all the time.
Yes,
I stopped doing it because they became so monotonous.
There's too many of them.
Too many of them. And we just, to provide sort of a survey of last year, counted the reports of red, orange, yellow, amber, and gold lights, unidentified objects, all of them, and they constitute about 50 to 60% of all the reports I've posted over the last year. Very interesting phenomenon. We're very interested in them, and I hope if any of the Coast listeners have a sighting of such a cluster of objects, they will report them.
And you go to Peter's website at ufocenter.com. Peter, thanks, and we'll talk to you next week. We're going to come back in a moment with Dr. John Curtis and your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast, and Dr. John Curtis staying with us, and we'll take your calls as well as we talk about truly a remarkable day today. Anytime a new president is sworn into office, Donald Trump, number 45. John, it really was kind of, proud. It was proud to be an American, to see the system work. What do you think?
Well, the peaceful, orderly transition to power, despite the rioting from anarchists, paid anarchists, I might add, that are out there just setting fires and,
That's not protesting.
What's the protest about? Is the protest about that they've painted Trump because, you know, the viciousness of the campaign painted him as a misogynist and a racist and a white supremacist and all this nonsense? I mean, you've got a president who is coming from, you know, a very successful business in real estate development, an American icon, who has decided that because of the problems faced in the country, that he's willing to undergo the kind of extreme sacrifices that are involved in the presidency. And you only hope and pray that, you know, that it doesn't take a toll on him like it does so many others. The man is 70 years of age. And, you know, you hope that he can stay healthy in this process. But, yes, it's a proud moment to see the country led by somebody who truly wants to do something different, understanding the gridlock from the left and the gridlock from the right in this country, that something had to be done. And the people spoke on Election Day that they wanted somebody who was not a left-winger or a right-winger. They wanted somebody who was an up-winger. I mean, somebody who was a positive voice for practical change in this country. And that's what you get with Donald Trump. Now, going forward, this is the downside to Donald Trump. He's disliked by the left. He's disliked by his own party. And he faces a torrent of Cold War hatred that is going on right now on Capitol. It's literally Cold War hysteria going on. The war hawks are beating the war drums right now. And it was, you know, the German foreign minister, really a week before the election, that came out. His name is Frank Walter Steinmeier, and he's considered a very reasonable voice in Germany and around, you know, the UN circles, said that he fears that if Trump does not get in, that we're heading for World War III.
Well, John, hold that right there. We'll talk about that, and we'll take some calls with you when we come right back. What a fast night already on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Paul Gersio from the Merlin Project joins us next hour to talk about Donald Trump's time tracks. And let's go back to Dr. John Curtis and your calls as well. It's going to be an exciting 4 years. You know, we're going to have ups and downs, John. We're human beings, and this is a very strange planet. But I have some high hopes for this.
Well, I think so. I mean, I think you got to be a little bit optimistic. I mean, for the super partisans that are out there, cheerleaders for the Republicans or the Democrats, I think, you know, you're going to have somebody in there that's a very independent thinker. And his concern, you know, everything he measures, any policy decision is going to be based on what he thinks is good for the American people and what, you know, he believes is going to lead to more prosperity, A, and B, what's going to lead to peace. He's stated very emphatically he doesn't want to spend more trillions of dollars on Mideast wars. So I think that's a very positive sign if people really understand that he's a candidate that really is he's a practical guy who wants to do good things.
On the day he was sworn in, we blew up 100 Al-Qaeda members.
And I think actually, were they Al-Qaeda or ISIS?
They said Al-Qaeda.
Well, I heard they were ISIS, but I mean, whether they're Al-Qaeda or
they're all
or
the
ISIS,
same, John.
Yeah, I mean, I think for... You know, and here's, you know, what he promised to do, and that was in his speech today, to eradicate Islamic terrorism. Now, that's going to be a tough order to fill because we know that they move around and they embed themselves in civilian populations. So it's easier said than done. But at least the terms are clear right now. There is an enemy out there, and we're going to be more careful with our borders, letting people in, refugees from different areas that potentially cannot be vetted and could infiltrate the country and create terrorism on American soil. So I think there's got to be a little bit more reassurance that the average person has that we're on the right track right now. But I do see on the horizon conflicts with the Republican Party, especially over repealing and replacing Obamacare and on key foreign policy issues like resetting relations with Russia.
And in some areas around the country right now, John, as we speak, there are some protests flaring up around the country, and some of them are getting a little violent.
And I think they're going to get, you know, they potentially could get more violent because these are professional agitators that are out there. They're not true protests, but we know that there are these paid groups that are out there fomenting violence and looting and various kinds of unlawful behavior. And Trump said that, you know, he will deal with the lawbreakers. He promised his constituents that this will be a law and order presidency.
Protesting is an American right, but not to throw a brick through a window.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a big difference between a freedom of speech and committing an act of mass murder or violence or property damage. So, you know, the public, you know, needs to understand that, you know, there's a time and place for protesting. And really, George, the time and place for protesting was before the election, not after the election. And I really think that the flames of these kind of protests have been fanned by the FBI director, James Comey, and by CIA director Brennan, who essentially said that this election was influenced by Russian President Vladimir Putin. Now, we've talked about this, and when you think about it, you've got people in Congress saying, well, we won't even go to the inauguration because we believe that Trump is not a legitimate president. But if you're going to believe that the Russian president influenced the American election, you would have to believe that somehow he got into the minds of people in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan, and somehow influenced the election there for Trump to win the Electoral College. Nobody in the right mind could possibly believe that. And so why is the CIA and FBI director promoting these bogus opposition research reports that were really done by the Hillary campaign and the anti-Trump folks in order to discredit Trump and then use that as a basis for basically discrediting his attacking the legitimacy of his presidency. If there's rioting that's going on in the streets, you would think that public officials who are making these kind of statements would like to. You never heard anything from Hillary or from any other responsible party saying that Trump won the election fair and square, and it's time for the American public to get behind our new president, not to go out and riot in the streets.
Yeah, that's true. Let's go to the phones now. Kevin in Norwich, Connecticut. Welcome to the program. Hi, Kev.
Hey, George. How you doing?
Good. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, buddy. Mr. Curtis, I guess we, most of us have the sense that President Trump, you know, every president prefers one or the other, either being a domestic president or an international leader. Obviously, the job requires both. I think we have the sense that Mr. Trump will be more of a domestic president. So I have two simple questions that you might respond to. One, where do you think the first place is that he will travel overseas? And number two, do you think he'll be able to foster a productive relationship with the Vatican, or specifically Pope Francis?
I think that there's no question that, you know, he has a high regard for the Pope, and I do think that he's going to be a strong foreign policy president. I think he's assembling a great team of people, and I think if Rex Tillerson can get approved, and I think that ultimately the pressure on Marco Rubio will be such that I think that he'll finally give in and let Tillerson become Secretary of State. The main consideration is, under the Obama years, he essentially ceded a lot of American power and influence to globalists, internationalists at the United Nations. So Obama really did not have an independent American foreign policy, other than going through the essentially the UN Security Council, taking his instructions from them. I think under Trump, he understands the concept of linkage in foreign policy, and Obama did not. And the concept of linkage means that you make working relationships, even with your adversaries, in order to deal with hotspots that emerge around the globe. A strong relationship with Putin is not capitulation, and it's not somehow Trump has become a puppet, as Hillary said, with Vladimir Putin. It's that this is the number one nuclear arsenal on the planet and one of the strongest land armies on the, certainly in the European and the subcontinent theater. And it's to the U.S. advantage to deal with adversaries like North Korea and China and various terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda and ISIS, to be able to have a working relationship with Putin. And I think that is the key that I think Trump will be able to bring about, which will make the world a much safer place and will put the U.S. in a much stronger global position.
And Pope Francis sent a message today, too, and simply said that he hopes that under Donald Trump's leadership, America's stature continues to be measured above all by its concern for the poor. And I'm sure it will. I'm sure.
I don't think there's any question that, you know, that the mission of the United States is to be charitable, to be big-hearted, and to be responsible for the downtrodden, as Pope Francis constantly advocates. I think every American believes in that kind of a foreign policy, but you can't have a foreign policy like that if you've engaged, as Obama did, for 6 years in allowing a foreign government, namely Saudi Arabia, to determine a policy of supporting terror groups in a sovereign country called Syria. This is what the U.S. did under Obama for 6 years. Essentially, you know how the administration frequently blamed Bashar Assad for the 300,000 deaths and 12 million people displaced. Well, all Bashar Assad has tried to do since the Arab Spring in 2011 is protect his sovereignty against a Wahhabi insurgency against his Shiite government. And Obama backed the Saudi insurgency, gave arms and cash to those rebel groups for 6 years, essentially resulting in 300,000 deaths, 12 million people displaced into Europe and to neighboring Middle East countries. And when you think about it, drove the UK out of the European Union because they did not want to accept the hordes of refugees flowing in from Syria. So that's the legacy and the foreign policy of President Obama and Hillary Clinton.
Kathy's in Post Falls, Idaho now. Welcome to the program. Kathy, you are on the air with us. Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
Good to have you with us. Go ahead. John's there.
Thank you. All right. Okay. Well, I just think you've echoed my whole family's feelings, George, about being proud to be an American today and how, oh my gosh, you know, this harkens back to the Kennedy years when there was that charisma about Camelot and stuff. But this is much more down to earth. And
yeah,
I think
it is.
He really is going to be an action president as much as he possibly can be, and all my prayers are with him. The other thing I wanted to say is about these protests. I couldn't agree more with your guest that I see the hand of people like George Soros in there paying these people to be agitators to foment all this hatred. And the other one more comment is your Dr. Peter Bregan a few nights ago, George, when you asked him why all this animosity and hate,
anger and everything else. Yeah,
yeah, the anger. And he said that it goes back decades in terms of virtually brainwashing into liberalism and to the left, the school kids, et cetera, in the educational system. And they've just been brought up to think that conservatives are evil. And I couldn't agree more with him because I'm a product of the 50s and school system, and I can see how education has just gone down, down, down since I was in public school. So I just think we have a shot, we have a chance to bring our country around and to remember the forgotten people.
Well, see, I just want, and thanks for your call, Kathy, to do the right thing. That's all. John, are we asking for much?
No, I think that, you know, the Trump's message is we can do more than what we've done. And the to be able to cite a goal, set goals that are higher for this country than what we've had in terms of education, whether you agree with choice, you don't agree with education choice, what you have to agree with is that this country must do better in many areas. And I like that Dr. Bloom or Mr. Bloom brought up, you know, Elon Musk.
Just Howard, just good old Howard.
Howard and the space program, you know, that is being taken by Musk. We're talking about, you know, I was at the museum, Natural History Museum, you know, at Science and Industry in Los Angeles last week, looking at the space shuttle and thinking to myself, my God, here we are as a country, the richest, most technologically advanced country on the planet, and we have no manned vehicle after the space shuttle. We're talking about retiring in 2012, the last space shuttle flight. And this Elon Musk is on the threshold of creating the first manned space vehicle since the space shuttle to be able to resupply that International Space Station and go beyond that to comets and to potentially to Mars. And the progress that we're making right now is so astounding in the private sector with these people that believe that more can be done and more should be done in this country. And your caller about the educational system, we must do more in our schools, set the bar higher, and somebody about Camelot and, you know, the Kennedy years, to let people know that there's still idealism and optimism that is out there. And I think Trump carries that message very well.
All right, let's take another call or two. John, let's go to Gordon in Kansas. Welcome to the show. Hi, Gordon.
Hello, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome, sir.
I just wanted to mention that I think one of the factors for Trump's victory, which has been maybe not mentioned much, is that people wanted more morality in the country, and that he had a greater vote for the evangelicals than I think other presidents have had. And there's many people that have believed that that God was using, is going to use him to bring morality back to the country.
Well, you may be right about that. John Curtis, quick reaction.
Oh, I think that there's no question that he appeals to a higher morality. And, you know, despite all of the accusations against him during the campaign, I do believe that he has a very clear moral clarity of wanting this country to achieve the greatness that it's intended to achieve. And I think you're right. I think there is something working there that is beyond just what people can see.
John, we're almost out of time. I do want you to give us a little synopsis on your feelings for the next 4 years.
Well, I think that it's going to be, I think Trump is going to hit a brick wall in Congress, battling some of his own party. I can see, you know, on this Obamacare situation, which, you know, is one of the key planks of his, his campaign, which is to replace and repeal and replace Obamacare, is that Republicans, led by Paul Ryan in the House, have no problem repealing Obamacare. Where they have the problem is replacing it. And I think that he's stated very clearly to them that he will not tolerate a repeal without a replacement. And that replacement is going to cost money. It's going to cost resources.
Oh, it's not going to be cheap.
It's not going to be cheap, and it may even be as expensive or more expensive than Obamacare for the government. So, but apart from that, here's the key issue about the Trump presidency that I think people should pay attention to. The key issue is, will we have a world that is at peace, where we can get along with other nuclear powers? Or will we have a world that is being pushed dangerously close to the brink of World War III and maybe a nuclear confrontation?
That is the key.
That is absolutely the key. And I think that with Trump, we have the hope and the wisdom of somebody who wants to develop the kind of relationships with our adversaries that are constructive, and that will take us as far as we can get away from that kind of...
Here's the key to everything, John. Watch how this unfolds. It will tell you how the rest of the 4 years will go, how he will deal with Kim Jong-un in North Korea. Will he try to approach him and negotiate and be friendly, or will it be hostile? Watch how that unfolds. And I tell you, that's how the next 4 years might unfold.
I think so.
All right. Thanks. Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. Later on in the program, by the way, Mark Zickery joins me as we talk about science fiction and some fun. In a moment, Paul Gersio joins us. Time tracks. We're going to look at Donald Trump's time tracks. Here we go.